Let's continue reading verses 8 through 21 of Genesis 21. Now, in this section of Genesis 21, we have the separation of Hagar and her son Ishmael from Sarah and her son Isaac. We also have God's promise to Hagar to make Ishmael a great nation. Genesis 21, now beginning at verse 8. So the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the same day that Isaac was weaned. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, scoffing. Therefore she said to Abraham, "Cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, namely with Isaac." And the matter was very displeasing in Abraham's sight because of his son. But God said to Abraham, "Do not let it be displeasing in your sight because of the lad or because of your bondwoman. Whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her voice. For in Isaac your seed shall be called. Yet I will also make a nation of the son of the bondwoman, because he is your seed." So Abraham rose early in the morning, and took bread and a skin of water, and putting it on her shoulder, he gave it and the boy to Hagar, and sent her away. Then she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. And the water in the skin was used up, and she placed the boy under one of the shrubs. Then she went and sat down across from him at a distance of about a bow shot. For she said to herself, "Let me not see the death of the boy." So she sat opposite him and lifted her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the lad. Then the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven and said to her, "What ails you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad and hold him with your hand, for I will make him a great nation." And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. Then she went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. So God was with the lad, and he grew and dwelt in the wilderness and became an archer. He dwelt in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. Once again, let's look at a few background notes now for this section of Genesis 21. In Genesis 16, we have the account of Hagar, Sarah's Egyptian maidservant, being given by Sarah to Abraham as a concubine. The purpose was to obtain an heir for Abraham, but that was the wrong way to go about it because it was sin, and the ends never justify the means. When it was found that Hagar was pregnant, Sarah despised her and treated her harshly, so much so that Hagar escaped and was on her way back to Egypt. But the Lord stopped Hagar in the wilderness and told her to return to Sarah and have the child and name him Ishmael. Hagar obeyed, and everything went reasonably well until Isaac was born. Now, once again, as we see here in Genesis 21, there is friction between Hagar and Sarah. In verse 8, we read that Abraham made a great feast on the same day that Isaac was weaned. How old do you think Isaac was when he was weaned? According to the customs of that day, it would be anywhere between 2 and 5 years of age. So you can see the magnitude of the miracle then, right? When God rejuvenated Sarah's 90-year-old body, not only to bear Isaac, but to nurse him for a few years. That's quite a miracle. Now, how old would Ishmael be at this point? At least 16. Because he was 14 when Isaac was born. And it was during the weaning feast that Sarah saw Ishmael mocking Isaac, probably belittling him and ridiculing Isaac as the child of promise. "Look at this little kid, and he's the heir? Why, Father Abraham loves me just as much, if not more, than this mere child." You see, this would be more than sibling rivalry. He's mocking Isaac, the child of promise. It's at this point that Sarah couldn't take it any longer. And she says to Abraham in verse 10, "Cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son." Now we see that Abraham was reluctant to do such a thing. After all, he loved his son Ishmael. Furthermore, Abraham had an obligation toward Hagar. But God spoke to Abraham and assured him that at this time, separation was the right course of action. One of the reasons, of course, was because of the great doctrinal truth that is illustrated here by this separation. Do you know what it is? Well, you'll find out shortly, because that's what we're going to go to. Let's move now to the doctrinal or teaching points for this section of Genesis 21. So doctrinal point number one, Hagar and Sarah picture the great contrast between law and grace. Hagar and Sarah picture the great contrast between law and grace. Now, I'm sure most of you are aware of the fact that the Apostle Paul draws on this account in Genesis 21 in the epistle to the Galatians. Turn to Galatians chapter 4. Galatians 4, verse 21. Tell me, you who desire to be under the law, do you not hear the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondwoman, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born according to the flesh, and he of the free woman through promise, which things are symbolic. You see, the false teachers of Galatia were distorting the pure gospel of God's grace. They were saying that you also had to do the works of the Mosaic law in order to be saved. Paul refutes that false teaching and uses Genesis 21 as an illustration. The whole affair between Abraham and Hagar and their attempt to produce an heir in their own strength and not in God's way, you see, was like trying to please God in our own strength by trying to do the works of the law. This is not God's way. God's way is by grace through faith. And that right way is represented by Sarah and the child of promise. Remember Hebrews 11:11. By faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age because she judged him faithful who had promised. What a great contrast, you see, between law and grace. Trying to please God by keeping the Ten Commandments in your own strength will never work because it can't be done. All you end up with are the works of the flesh, as in the case of Hagar and Ishmael. But in contrast, you see, coming to the Lord in simple faith and trusting his promises as Sarah did, this is to recognize God as a God of grace, and this pleases God. And it results in something brand new, the new birth as represented by Sarah and Isaac. Hagar and Sarah picture the great contrast between law and grace. Now, doctrinal point number two. Ishmael and Isaac picture the great contrast between the flesh and the spirit. Ishmael and Isaac picture the great contrast between the flesh and the spirit. Galatians 4:29 says, "But as he who was born according to the flesh," speaking of Ishmael, "then persecuted him who is born according to the Spirit," speaking of Isaac, "even so it is now." So Ishmael was born according to the flesh, and Isaac was born according to the Spirit. And thus they picture the great contrast between the flesh and the Spirit. The flesh is the sinful human nature that we all have, that we're born with. The flesh is never reformed. It's always at enmity with God. And as Ishmael was in conflict with Isaac, so is the flesh in conflict with the spirit. Look at Galatians chapter 5, verse 17. "For the flesh lusts against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary to one another, so that you do not do the things that you wish." So then how do you deal with the flesh? We have it, and we will have it until we get our resurrected bodies. How do you deal with it? The key is right here in Galatians 4 and pictured in Genesis 21. Cast out the bondwoman and her son. Look at Galatians 4, verse 30, once again. Now, how do you practice this principle of casting out the bondwoman and her son? We continually separate from the desires of the flesh by walking in the Spirit. Galatians 5, 16. "I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lusts of the flesh." Flee the flesh, as 2 Timothy 2:22 says. Don't feed the flesh. Don't watch trash on TV or video. Don't put yourself in situations where it's easy for the flesh to be tempted. But walk in the Spirit by reading and watching and doing things that help you mature in Christ. Now, this is not always easy. It's a lot easier for Ishmael to stay around. But we must deal with the flesh ruthlessly and decisively. And this is what Ephesians and Colossians means, by the way, when it talks about putting off the old man and putting on the new. So all of this then is taught in the New Testament and pictured in Genesis 21. Ishmael and Isaac picture the great contrast between the flesh and the spirit. What about practical application? Practical application number one. It isn't always easy for us to do the right thing. It isn't always easy for us to do the right thing. It wasn't easy for Abraham to send Hagar and Ishmael away, but it was God's will. Did you ever have to do something very unpleasant, but you know it was the right thing to do because it was God's will? Tough love, for example, is not always pleasant, but sometimes it's the right thing. Illustration, sometimes we have to ask a student to leave Emmaus Bible College because of bad behavior. Now, this is not very pleasant to do, especially when that student is likable and shows academic promise. But it's the right thing to do. Tough love in the discipline of your children is not always easy, but it's the right thing to do. Discipline in the church, the local church, is not always easy, but it's the right thing to do. Remember, it isn't always easy for us to do the right thing. Practical application number two. When in need, remember Hagar. When in need, remember Hagar. If ever there was a person in need, physically and emotionally, it was Hagar. Lost in the wilderness, no water, Ishmael, her teenage son, and only hope for the future, about to die. But God saw Hagar's situation and heard Ishmael's cries. And God opened Hagar's eyes and showed her water and gave her strength and gave her promises concerning Ishmael. God met Hagar's needs. You have needs this morning? Like Hagar, you may not realize that God knows and hears and he does care. God can open your eyes and begin to meet your needs as he did for Hagar. When in need, remember Hagar. Practical application number three. Husbands, listen to your wives. Husbands, listen to your wives. Look at verse 12 one more time. Whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her voice. In the authority structure that God has ordained for the home, the husband is to be the head of the household. But the wife is given as a helpmeet for the husband. And part of that being the helpmeet is communication with the husband. And the husband should listen to his wife. Many times God speaks to the husband and directs the husband through the good counsel of his wife. Sarah certainly is a case here. And I can assure you that such is the case in my own life. Now let's also say, back in chapter 16, Sarah gave the wrong advice to Abraham about Hagar. So husbands must make sure their wives' counsel is in line with Scripture. That goes without saying. But having said that, God has definitely given wives as helpmeets, and that includes advice and counsel. So husbands, listen to your wives.